it's Flo, and this is my impression of a geographically challenged rock band delivering a commencement speech. Hello, graduates! Here's a song called Adulthood is Scary, but Progressive is Snapshot. Plug it in and save money for being a safe driver. Let me hear you, Cleveland! I mean, Kansas City, New York?
Safe drivers save with Snapshot from Progressive.
Now you're wearing a stupid hat. Congrats! No, but really, where are we?
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Snapshot not available in all states.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Karen Cam Radio Show. The intention of this show is to empower and inspire you to manifest the life of your dreams, whether it's radiant health, prosperity, loving relationships, or simply peace of mind. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Cam, author of the number one bestseller, Guide to Healing Chronic Pain, A Holistic Approach. And if you don't have a copy of my book, you can get a free excerpt download on my website, www.karencam.com. And today we are going to be talking about something pretty controversial. So I think that when it comes to food and diets and, you know, vegetarianism, veganism versus, you know, eating meat, there's a lot of controversy. There's a lot of emotions about that. So we're going to get one side of the opinion here as far as, you know, whether or not we've heard, or I've heard, I should say, that you know, people really shouldn't be eating meat because it's just not ethical to kill other animals, that we can use all this land that we're using, at least for commercial farming, for animals, all that land can be used to grow food and feed a heck of a lot more people all over the world versus a whole bunch of animal, you know, eating hungry people here in the United States and North America. So I thought, well, gee, I didn't really question that wisdom. It seemed like, you know, that made sense. I learned more about how commercial, you know, animal products are raised and was very upset over that. Now, with my personal health, I tried being vegetarian for a while. This was like over 10 years ago, and I had a hard time. I wanted to eat more Indian food, and I was eating, you know, good stuff, like not just, you know, processed food, which isn't good for you, but, you know, lentils and beans and, you know, I did eat my share of pasta back then, which I would eat, and then 20 minutes later, I'd be hungry again, and so my husband at the time used to make fun of me and say, oh, yeah, you can, you're just a bunch of carnivores. You just have to go get your steak once a week, don't you? You know, so it was just this running joke between my ex-husband and I about how much meat I had to eat. But that's, unfortunately, you know, I ended up having to eat meat because I felt better that way. And I continue to do so right now because my needs are such that it, you know, that's what my body wants, and I feel healthier for it. So Lier Keith is a writer, a radical feminist, food activist, environmentalist, and the author of the book, The Vegetarian Myth. And her book, I got to tell you, there's a ton of comments on Amazon. You know, like I said, it's a very, very controversial, you know, topic, but what an interesting book. And so her writing and lectures focus on civilization's violence against the planet, male violence against women, and the need for serious resistance to both of these things in our culture and shifting that. So we're going to be talking to her today about some of these, you know, rarely discussed moral questions about vegetarianism and why she wrote this book, The Vegetarian Myth. So with me is Lier Keith. Thank you so much for joining us, Lier.
Well, thanks for having me on your show, Karen.
Well, you know, I'm sure you have gotten all sorts of positive and negative feedback from a book with this title. So
yeah,
let's
definitely
back up.
Controversial.
Yes, and just ask, like, how did you get into this? Like, have you always been a staunch anti-vegetarian, or how did this all come about?
I would say from a very young age, I was somebody who was very motivated by issues of justice and sustainability. Even as a very young child, I could see that the world was being destroyed. you know, by industrial processes, and I mourned for the loss of animals and forests and, you know, rivers that had fish in them and things that I had never even seen but I knew had existed once. And I think a lot of children feel that way. I think most children have a natural connection to animals and to the wild and to the places that they love. So then when I was 16, I met another teenage girl who was a vegan. Her family were vegans. And she presented me with this very compelling argument about how I could save everything I loved if I simply ate this way. And I had no counter information to this, so I took it up very fervently, as we do when we're teenagers. And that's not a bad thing. It's actually really good that we have teenagers who are engaged and impassioned and, you know, who can point out adult hypocrisy. It's that stage of life when that's what's important. And that keeps social movements moving forward. It's always the young who push it. So I don't regret that I was that young person, but I wish that I had had more information. So I became a vegan. I jumped over the vegetarian stage, didn't even bother
wow.
with that. I went right to vegan. Yeah. 2 weeks later, I was a vegan, hardcore, that was it. And I did it for 20 years. And
20
my health
years?
Declined. 20 years, just about, yeah. And my health declined and declined and eventually was permanently damaged, and it made no sense to me. Why was this diet that was supposed to be the most just, the most sustainable, the most compassionate, why did it fail me so utterly? And I watched as all my friends did the same thing. I was the last holdout in my friendship circle. Everybody else gave up before I did, and I just refused. And I'm the one who ended up with the most damage because of it. So eventually my health collapsed catastrophically, and I had to stop. And then there's a year
wow.
or two of just complete moral confusion and, you know, just real agony about why didn't this work, and who am I going to be now that I'm not a vegan anymore? And it was really hard. Part of the problem with being a vegan is that it is a very intense identity, and nobody gives this up easily. But, you know, when you're trying to absorb new information, you know, it feels like it's a threat against yourself, because it's not just what you eat. You know, it becomes who you are, and that makes it really scary, you know, when you're faced with this sort of ethical and sort of intellectual collapse, you know, of your worldview. So that's basically my story. In some ways, it's a cautionary tale. And I wrote the book that I wrote because I really wanted the next generation of impassioned young people to not make the same mistakes that my generation made. There is way better information out there about how we can actually save planet. So it's not the values that are wrong, it's not the ethics, and it's certainly not the passion. It's simply a lack of information, and that's what I tried to provide in the book.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for sharing that story. And, you know, I'm sure when you did veganism, you probably did it much better than a lot of other teens that I see, that their idea is, well, I'm not going to eat meat. So they go to the store and they get a whole bunch of processed crackers and cookies and, you know, processed food on the shelf. And I'm like, ah, that is not nutrition, you know, as opposed to necessarily increasing, you know, their whole food intake, which, you know, I would prefer, you know, over all that
sure.
processed food, because they think they're doing the right thing. So thank you so much for, you know, putting your love and your life into, you know, something to help, you know, support this next generation. And that's, you're right. We have a lot of, you know, kids that just suddenly go, oh my gosh, you know, I don't think this is ethical, but you're right. They don't have the information. So they just assume that everything we've been taught is correct. So what in your book kind of, you know, helps us kind of reframe really what's going on in the world and all these ethical questions, you know, about using the land a certain way and saving the planet?
So the basic problem is that agriculture itself is an apparently destructive activity. And in fact, it's the most destructive thing that people have done to the planet. And that's because of what agriculture is. So you have to understand this. It's hard for us to see it because we live inside an agricultural society. And at this point, you know, it's conquered the world. But, you know, you take a piece of land and then you clear every living thing off it. And I mean down to the bacteria. And then you plant it to human use. So it's biotic cleansing. And what this has meant is mass extinction. I mean, they're calling this the age of the Anthropocene age, because it's the age of, quote, human beings. We've destroyed everything. Agriculture has run through every possible continent that it could. And at this point, 98% of the forests and 99% of the prairies have been destroyed around the planet. And they've been destroyed in the service of agriculture. because that's what agriculture is. You know, it's biotic cleansing. It's taking wholesale, taking over biotic communities, destroying them, and then simply using them for humans instead. And that's the problem. This is an inherently destructive activity, and it's drawdown as well, because you're using up water and soil and trees and species and ultimately entire biotic communities. Those animals have nowhere to go, and so it's resulted in mass extinction. We lose 200 species every single day now around the world. That's our kin. You know, those are our brothers and sisters, and they're not coming back. You know, it's done. Once they're gone, they're gone. And this is what agricultural societies do. That is what agriculture is. There's no driven through Nebraska or Iowa. I mean, what you see is miles and miles of corn or wheat or soy. That's a clear cut of the grass forest.
Yeah, that's true. So it's really not, you know, just a comparison of is the land better used for raising animals or plants. What you're saying is that if we really look around, oh my gosh, there is all this land being used for agriculture, and both problems exist. So whether you're vegetarian or a meat eater, the whole society of being, you know, agriculture-based is the problem.
Right. Are you there?
Wow. Yep. Oh, got you back. There you go.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know what happened. We're having terrible rainstorms here, so the electricity and whatnot is coming and going. Yeah. Anyway, where were we? What else do you need from me?
Well, let's discuss a little bit about the health issues. Now, now on some level, spiritual, if you will, there's a lot of, you know, spiritual practices, like yogic practices, that, you know, even, you know, Chinese, say, you know, monks, you know, try to increase their spiritual energy, so to speak, by not eating meat. And so we think, well, for spiritual enlightenment, maybe we should be going more vegetarian. On some level, it'd be really great to have the idea of like, gee, I don't want to kill a living animal in order to sustain myself. But nutrition-wise, many of us, including myself, have some real difficulty with being able to do that. At some level, you know, maybe 200 years from now, maybe we will be able to just breathe in the sun and be able to live off the energy of the sun. But at this time, this isn't really what's happening. So can you speak about that whole nutritional piece and your own experience and what you wrote about in the book?
Yeah, so the problem with agricultural foods, so first of all, we for 4 million years we ate meat, and there's just no question in the archaeological record. So this is the template of the human body. We need that nutrient-dense food. We have brains that require a tremendous amount of energy, and we have very short digestive systems. And the only way we're going to get the nutrients that we need is by eating very nutrient-dense food. So muscle meat has anywhere from 10 to 100 times more nutrients than any plant food. And the organ meats, which around the world have been considered sacred pretty much in every culture, those have between 10 to 100 times more nutrients than even the muscle meat. And that's what we need to be eating. That's what we evolved eating. I mean, you can look at any cave painting and you will see people hunting. You can look in, you know, what they call the midden in the garbage dumps of those people and you will find bones. You know, and you can look at the enamel on the teeth and, you know, the various ways that they analyze bones, and it's quite clear that, you know, the proteins were all coming from meat. So there's not really any question what we evolved eating. So given that that's the human template, then 10,000 years ago, in seven places around the globe, people switched to agriculture. And immediately in the archaeological record, people shrink 6 inches and their teeth fall out. And that's what happens when you stop eating the nutrient-dense foods and you start eating a diet that's essentially nothing but carbohydrate. So you have the problem of excess and the problem of deficiency. And the excess is, of course, the carbohydrate, the sugar. And this is going to cause everything from diabetes to cancer to heart disease because they're very inflammatory. There's way too many omega-6s and not enough omega-3s. That might be getting too technical, but if you look it up, you'll see what I'm talking about. And then the deficiency. There's the proteins that are available in plants are not actually digestible to humans. They come wrapped in cellulose, and we have no mechanism to digest cellulose. It's actually called insoluble fiber, and it certainly helps transit through the digestive tract, but we can't eat it. That's the point. We can't digest it. Cows can. Ruminants can. They have multiple stomachs where they have bacteria that actually do that digestion for them, but we can't as humans. So we can't get protein, eating those. A very, very poor quality protein is all we can get out of it. And then there's a whole bunch of other things that you're just not going to get enough of. Minerals, certainly. Meat is very nutrient dense in terms of minerals. You've got the omega-6, omega-3 problem. Now, those are both fats that humans need, but they have to be in balance. And the problem with plants is that they're very high in omega-6s and not enough omega-3s. And meat that is properly, if the animals are properly fed, which is to say if the cows are eating grass, you'll have, the right ratio of omega-3s to omega-6s. But at this point, Americans are eating so much carbohydrate, and because even if they are eating meat, it's factory farmed, so it's being fed corn instead of grass. The omega-6s are like through the roof, and there are people whose bodies, you can test, and there's not a single omega-3 anywhere in their bodies. And the problem with omega-6s is they create inflammation. So they are over-implicated in health problems from, dementia, Alzheimer's, diabetes, heart disease, because everything is just super inflamed all the time. So that's the omega-3 problem. And then you've got things like, amino acids like carnitine. You just can't get them anywhere but meat. Tryptophan is another one. Yeah, you can sort of get a tiny bit from plants. But anybody who's been depressed knows that's the precursor to serotonin. You can't have a happy mood state, without some serotonin. And the only way to get it is to eat it. We can't produce tryptophan. It's an essential amino acid. This is one of the reasons why, there's a huge epidemic of depression is, between this emphasis on the high carb, low fat and the fact that all the animals are factory farmed, there's no tryptophan in our diets either. So it's no wonder over the last 20 or 30 years we've seen this huge increase in that. And then we can just talk about fats and cholesterol generally. Your brain is 60% fat. If you're not eating fat, there's no way to have a stable mood state. We are actually a set of electrical impulses inside a watery environment, especially our brains. And in order for your synapses to fire, the nerves have to be coated with basically cholesterol. So without that, your brain just starts to fall to pieces. And there's no way to be happy. There's no way to stay stable. I mean, they say some of the statistics are if you're eating a low-fat diet, it's 4 times as likely to commit suicide, die from a violent death, experience severe depression. And many, many people have found that by simply increasing the amount of saturated fat in their diets, depression just lifts in a day or two. I've seen it happen before my eyes, so it can be an amazing thing. And meanwhile, the Department of Agriculture has been telling us for 30 years to eat these high-carb, low-fat diets, and I don't think it's any surprise that we have these epidemics of things like depression and ADD in children. Their brains simply aren't being fed properly. I can throw a couple more statistics in there. Women who are vegetarians are 7 times as likely to have children with birth defects. And the reason is just you're not getting enough vitamin A, vitamin D. You can only get vitamin A and vitamin D from animal products. We can't get them from plants, and we can't create them ourselves. We have to eat them. There's a myth that we can get all of our vitamin D from sunshine, but it's not really true. You can get a little. But you'd have to be naked at the equator every day to get enough vitamin D from sunshine. And most of us, that's not where we live, and it's not what we do. So it's not going to happen. So the vitamin A, the vitamin D, the folic acid, the B12, all of these are really hard to get on a vegetarian diet and impossible on a vegan diet, and that's why that study was done in Europe. But it's very chilling, and we think we're doing the right thing for ourselves and for the next generation, and we're not. We're really doing damage to our own bodies, and I think a lot of people have regrets about the kinds of things that have happened to their babies and their children by trying to feed them these diets. I mean, it's a story I've heard over and over.
That sounds really dangerous. It's one thing as an adult to decide to do that for yourself, but then to do it for your children when they're developing and they need that saturated fat and those vitamins, that does sound pretty scary. Well, what about people that say, I can get the tryptophan or the saturated, tryptophan from taking a supplement, or I can take the a supplement of vitamin D or B12, and, you know, I don't want to eat saturated fat in the form of meat, so I'm going to go ahead and do, you know, coconut oil instead. I mean, you know, does that not make up for, you know, eating meat?
You could try. You'd have to take about 12 pills every day. And I just want to point out that eating supplements instead of food is, by definition, an eating disorder. I mean, we're supposed to eat food. I mean, literally, that if you look under, you know, what is an eating disorder, that's what eating disordered people do. You know, they'll eat supplements instead of food. And so now we've got this whole subculture that is encouraging, especially young women, to do this. And it's just leading down a very unhappy road into an eating disorder, that food is supposed to provide those nutrients for you. It should be obvious that this is not going to meet the needs of the human body if you have to take a pile of pills every day in order to meet just your basic nutritional needs. You know, it's not adequate. And, you know, there's many, many ways that a lot of these nutrients probably work with each other symbiotically. That it's so complicated, how do you even understand it? So I think there's all kinds of cofactors that you're simply not going to get in a vitamin pill as well. We're supposed to eat whole food. You know, it's supposed to be there. That's
right.
What we evolved eating. And if we're not getting all the cofactors, it's you know, only going to be partly what we need.
Well, I do agree with that. And one of the things that was very challenging is that, you know, recently my father-in-law was dying of cancer, and he's passed away now. But, you know, there were a lot of these movies that we, educational movies that we watched and sent to them to watch about, you know, eating and whole foods. And what's really interesting is some of the top, not all of them, but some of the top people that are well-known, like Gerson Therapy, that kind of thing, that are treating people successfully and getting rid of their cancer, all promote a plant-based diet. So they juice a lot, first of all, but it's tons and tons and tons of plants, and not a lot of, my understanding anyway, because I haven't done it myself, not a lot of emphasis on animal foods, and it's just pushed for a plant-based diet. And they're successful in, you know, curing or at least, you know, remitting very serious cancers versus our conventional medical system. So, you know, that there's that disconnect for me. You know what I mean? Like, how can we be curing cancer with this kind of therapy and yet say for the average person, you need to eat meat? Do you have any response to that?
I do. One is that a lot of that is just anecdotal. I mean, when they actually stack up the studies one by one, it's not there. I mean, they're not actually curing enough people that it's statistically significant. And the original Gerson therapy, they actually used liver. They made juice from the liver, and that was the basis of the program. And his children who took it over stopped doing that. And whatever success they had, I think, really ground to a halt when they stopped using the organ meats as the basis of the therapy. The thing to remember is that sugar is the main food of cancer. That's what cancer eats, is sugar. And so it's no question, it just seems, it doesn't seem very, you know, it doesn't, like, that's what cancer eats. So it's no wonder that agricultural peoples get cancer. And in fact, cancer was the original disease of civilization. As people from Europe started traveling around the globe and finding indigenous people who had never had cancer, didn't even have a word for cancer, you know, who were hunter-gatherers or fishers, they were amazed that there was no cancer. And they realized right away that this was a disease of civilization. And that's the original one, is cancer. So it just seems very clear to me that, you know, the problem is these agricultural diets that are, you know, are essentially this huge overload of sugar. That's, you know, what triggers it. And also the fact that your immune system is very much dependent on high-quality vitamin D, which is, you know, very deficient in agricultural diets. So I think a lot of those movies, I think those people mean well, but they don't really have facts and figures. You know, in a laboratory setting, it just doesn't stack up.
Yeah, it's hard to do really good types of studies on food because you can't really control, and it's not ethical necessarily, to control every aspect of the food. And so, there are a lot of, many, many anecdotal cases for all the different doctors, not just the Gerson therapy, but other doctors about their success. And I think relative to maybe what people were eating before, what they were suggesting is a huge improvement. You know, much more nutrient dense than what they were eating. So it'd be interesting to say, I mean, you can't do that kind of study, but do a head-to-head, you know, potentially to say, okay, so this person's going to be randomized into, you know, a whole food with pastured animals and eggs, you know, diet, and this other person's going to be randomized into this, you know, more plant-based diet, and then see, you know, whether there's a difference in cancer remission. And unfortunately, those studies can't be done. I mean, it's just not necessarily viable to do those studies. So, and I do believe, you know, being trained in some Chinese medicine, is that everybody's systems are very individualized and need different things. And I know for me that I look better, I feel better, and I'm constantly getting people saying, wow, your skin looks really good. And I stopped eating gluten, you know, and a lot of grains.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought eating soy was a really healthy thing and had no idea about the anti-nutrients in soy. And I thought that that was a good thing to do, and so I stopped eating that as well. And my skin is probably, I mean, I use other tools, obviously, but my skin's better now than it was as a teenager by changing this diet.
We could have a whole talk just about soy.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think, yes, and then we're actually going to have somebody back on the show talking about soy. But we have about 3 minutes left. I want to make sure people know where to get a copy of your book. Also, if you have a website, if you could tell us where to find you on the World Wide Web.
Sure. It's actually easy to find me. It's leerkeith.com, and that's actually a joke because my name is really hard to spell. So it's L-I-E-R-R-E. It's my first name. It's actually easier. I mean, if you're not going to remember this, if you don't have a pen next to you, look up Vegetarian Myth. I am the only person who has written a book by that title. And if you look that up, you will absolutely find my website, and you find all my other work and all my upcoming appearances and my email address and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, great. Now, do you have some workshops or some classes coming up?
I'm going to be speaking at the big annual Western Price Conference that's coming up in Indiana on November 8th. And for your readers who don't, your listeners who don't know, Western Price Foundation is a fabulous organization that tirelessly works on behalf of traditional foods and farmers and grass-based farming and just everything. Go to their, they're way more important than me. Go to their website, westonaprice.org. If you have questions about anything that I'm saying, it's all there. And their conference is fabulous every year. So this year it's in Indianapolis.
Great. And that's how we found you, actually, was looking at the speaker
list.
Oh,
great.
And I was like, oh, I need her on my show. And, you know, I've been talking, you know, with Sally Fallon Morrell on my show and other folks. Mm-hmm. And Sarah Pope, and you know, and we talk about, you know, why food must come from our, you know, communities, and so, you know, doing the farmers market things. We even have a, you know, and my wishes come true because I'm very not so green thumb, you know. So having these farmers, these young people around us who want to farm, you know, and they're amazing young people.
Sure.
And I have this farm that literally delivers eggs to my house every week.
Oh,
eggs and meat,
so,
and they're
fun.
Like, oh. Yeah, and they're like, they love me because they're like, oh wow, she's the one that wants the cow tongue, you know, and the calf liver, and they're like, we love you, and the chicken feet, right? They're like, we love you, you're really
great.
Cool. Oh, that's great. So lots of great stuff today. Thank you so much, Lierre, for just, you know, spending your time with us. I know you've had this amazing, you know, long journey of having, you know, been a vegan and really researched. You know, about vegetarianism and what's really going on in the world, and your own personal experience, and also, you know, your book. What a great gift to us. So thank you so much for spending your time with us today.
Well, thanks for doing your show. It's really important to get the word out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's I wanted a book like this 10 years ago.
Me too.
You know, because I was like, man, I need some fodder here. I need some evidence here. I can't fight back, you know, even just people saying, well, our teeth were made to only eat, you know, vegetables. And I'm like, really? Really? You know?
They don't grind side to side. Watch a cow or a goat. It's sideways. We chew up and down. Like, number one problem here. Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't have that information, but now we do. So thank you so much again, and thanks for our listeners for listening in on our show today. Take care. Bye, Lierre. Thank
Bye.
You so much.
Bye.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.